clustering around a yellow pennant stapled to a wooden pole. Each bore the image of the coven assigned to them. Behind each coven stood a suppressor, the fist lightning symbol on a black band around his upper arm. Britton spotted True Love, shouldering the only black pennant in the field, fluttering the ghosted star behind the moon. Coven 4, Umbra, it read. The magic behind the magic. Downer stood at attention beside True Love. A third man, tall, broad-shouldered, with close-cropped ginger hair, stood behind them. Shadow Coven alone wore Intertech uniforms. The rest of the covens were in standard digital camouflage, their sock shoulder patches and magical school lapel pins, the only indicators that they were not regular soldiers. The soldiers to either side of Shadow Coven moved away reflexively. Britton jogged over and fell in beside the red-headed man. He had a wide, doughy face, spotted with freckles. His mouth was lined, wrinkled into a permanent smile. Beside the coven symbol on his chest was a stylized image of a man calling, three wolves howling in answer. He winked at Britton, and two sparrows landed on the guy's head. He paid them no mind, the corners of his eyes smiling. One of the novices of Karina Coven stared frankly at the birds, his eyes platter wide. Britton noticed a Terramancer's lapel pin.
Just what in the hell are you looking at, novice?
Fitzy had arrived on Britton's heels and turned to the novice from Karina.
Nothing, sir.
Sure didn't look like nothing, novice. Looked like you were staring at one of our erstwhile contractors here, who, I might remind you, are none of your damn concern.
Well, it's just birds, sir.
Birds? What goddamn birds are you talking about, son?
The sparrows danced and flapped their wings atop the redhead's ball cap.
Sir, I guess...
No, you guess nothing, novice. You're a goddamn earth-moving, rock-crushing combat Terramancer of the Supernatural Operations Corps. You are not some kind of pansy-ass selfer druid who chats with bunny rabbits and cuddly puppies. If, in its wisdom, the Corps elects to examine certain practices via its contractual staff, that is no affair of yours, and it is certainly covered by the non-disclosure agreement inherent in your security clearance, which, if I remember correctly, you agreed to abide by. Do I make myself perfectly clear?
Perfectly, sir.
Now tell me again what the hell you were looking at.
Nothing, sir. I am not aware of what you are referring to, sir.
Outstanding!
Fitzy spun on the redhead.
Get rid of him, Richards, or God is my witness, I will have your ass!
Richard's smile vanished, and the birds took wing. Britton marveled at the disciplined rose, awash in the mixed currents of so much channeled magic. He had never seen so many sorcerers in one place. Fitzsimmons took his place in front of the coven pennant, as a stern-looking sock lieutenant colonel strode out in front of the assembly, the flame pattern on his lapel pin marking him as a pyromancer.
Morning, campers. I apologize for the repeat here, but we have a newly constituted coven joining us, so I'm going to ask for your patience while I go over the indoc brief one more time. My name is Lieutenant Colonel Allen, but you may refer to me by my call sign of Crucible. I want you to know that I live up to my name, and you're going to have to pass through me before you can graduate here. Here is the SOX Sorcerer's Apprentice Officer Leadership Combined Course, or SAOLCC. This is our source campus, and it is a rare honor for all of you to be here. I need not remind you that the existence of this campus, or the FOB frontier in general, is classified at the secret level, and you are forbidden to discuss anything you do or see here with any persons who do not have a strict need to know. You will live, work, and train with your covens for the rest of your tenure here. You will notice that our new coven is contractually provided. Umbra Coven is a private entity that will work on the fringes of this school. You will assist them as required, but they are outside of the realm of your concern, and I do not want to hear anyone in this assemblage discussing them beyond what is specifically required of you in training exercises. Am I making myself perfectly clear?
Yes, sir!
Outstanding. I will insist on military discipline here at all times. At the head of each pennant, you will see your coven commander. I fully expect each of you to adhere to his word as if it were my own. No, the very word of God himself. That said, we're not the regular army, and it is essential that you feel free to ask questions. This is just like high school, folks. Raise a hand and wait to be called on. Everyone clear?
Yes, sir!
Very well. Any questions before we get started?
Britton looked uneasily at Fitzy's broad shoulders, Crucible's words sinking in. Obey his orders like the word of God. He felt his magic surge.
All right. You will follow me to the practice field on the other side of your quarters. Coven 4, please follow Chief Warrant Officer Fitzsimmons to enroll in suitability assessment. Fall out in Coven order!
Crucible led the way past the star-shaped buildings to a corridor of firm ground that snaked off through a tiny opening in the blast barricades across from them. A massive concrete dome rose off in the distance, the surface pitted and showing rusted rebar supports. Signs were mounted to the barricade wall, pointing to either direction. Terramantic engineering range, weather control range, flight exercise activity, fire control range, and suitability assessment. The group moved through the gap to a football field-sized parade ground, surrounded by high sandbag walls. The ground had been left to mud, blasted in places, burned in others. The mud rose into weird shapes, vaguely resembling sculpture. Here and there were bits of rock walls. A few dark patches looked suspiciously like blood. Fitzy gestured to Shadow Coven, walking them in the opposite direction, through a separate gap in the blast barricades. Beyond it, a chain-linked fence rose some 30 feet in the air, topped by razor wire. Wooden guard towers broke its length into sections, covered by peaked roofs. The railings sported spotlights and light machine guns fixed by hard points to the metal railings. Magic suppressors patrolled the catwalks intersecting them, black body armor displaying the armored fist with its perennial clutch of lightning bolts. Through the fence line, Britton could make out a row of low-domed Quonset huts, their corrugated metal roofs patched with rust and stenciled with numbers. People lounged outside them, smoking, sitting, sullenly talking. They contrasted sharply with the crisp uniforms of everyone else Britton had seen on the FOB thus far. Most wore a patchwork of civilian clothes, cheap hiking jackets and blue jeans. They were a mix of men and women, and here and there, Britton spotted people wearing the one-piece orange jumpsuits he had found himself in when he'd first woken from the shotgun blast. The biggest shock was their hair, a variety of lengths and shades, defying the military orderliness present everywhere else. A long row of blast barricades separated the line of Quonset huts from a flat, muddy field where groups of people in civilian clothes or cast-off military uniforms stood in orderly rows facing two SOC officers. As Britton approached the fence line, he watched the officers extend their hands, pillars of flame rising from the earth before them. A moment later, the rows of civilians followed suit, with mixed results. Some of the pillars sputtered and collapsed. Some teetered wildly. Some failed to manifest at all. Across from the Quonset huts stood a small replica of the plaza Britton had seen outside the Peapods, a chow hall, a morale facility, rows of schoolhouses. It was a basin to itself, all packed tightly within the confines of the razor-wire-topped fencing and guard towers. Britton, Downer, Truelove, and Richards silently followed Fitzy toward a gap in the fence line, overlooked by two large guard towers. There, the fence was wheeled at the bottom to form giant sliding panels that rolled aside as they approached. A long sign spanned the length between the two guard towers. Forward Operating Base Frontier, it read. Suitability Assessment and Magic Indoctrination Section. Just inside the gate, a short walk from the entrance to the Quonset huts, a waist-high bit of telephone pole had been erected in the mud. A thinner pole reached from it roughly 10 feet skyward. Lowered about the base was a rigid plastic American flag, colored reflective orange, the stars and stripes in subdued black.
They want to be sure everyone can see it clearly when it goes up.
Just beyond it, tucked into a corner of the compound, was a flat-topped cinder block pillbox, scarcely 7 feet high and fitted with a single rusty metal door, stenciled with the words, Intensive Room. The door was handleless, its chipped surface marked only by a sliding panel at eye level. Two suppressors stood vigilantly just outside it, their belts replete with the full scope of law enforcement panoply. Collapsing baton, pepper spray, taser, zip cuffs. As they entered, the guards snapped crisp salutes, which Fitzy returned. The knot of indolent-looking civilians rose to their feet, extinguishing cigarettes and looking toward the group. A small cluster of them stood apart from the rest, casting surly glances toward Fitzy and his coven. They surrounded a tall man, pale and sickly thin, his black hair plastered to his forehead. His face was narrow and arrogant, with a hooked blade of a nose and small, dark eyes. mouth was set in a look of dramatic disapproval. Noting Britton's gaze, the pale man crossed his arms over his chest and cocked an eyebrow. Bolts of lightning sprang from his shoulders to crisscross his chest before one of the suppressors on the catwalk above him rolled his magic back. The man gave the suppressor the middle finger, but his eyes never left Britton. The group gave a wide berth to a long-haired boy not much older than Downer, his clothing soaked, skin beaded with moisture. The water coursing through his hair made it look grayish, slick as seaweed. The boy's wet skin and clothing made him shiver in the chilly air, and one of the soldiers guarding them offered him a parka and military camouflage. The boy looked sheepishly like he might take it, then shook his head angrily at a glare from the black-haired man. The rest of the group nodded their approval of the refusal. The boy stood shaking, looking miserable.
What's that all about?
That's the no-no crew, and the piece of crap they've elected to lead them. They'd rather have that kid freeze to death than take a coat from one of us. You want to learn how to be worthless? There's your best bet. I catch you hanging with them, I'll know you're well and truly lost. The upside of that will be that you'll have outlived your usefulness and I can pound you into oblivion with a clear conscience.
The no-no crew? Why do they call them that?
I suspect you'll find out shortly.
A sock major, whip-thin and with a shock of flaming red hair, strode forward to meet them. The pale sun flashed off the pyromancer's pin secured to his lapel. He returned Fitzy's salute, then shook his hand with genuine affection.
Chief Warrant Officer Fitzsimmons.
The man nodded to Richards and Truelove.
Good to see you two again as well. Colonel Taylor told me to expect you, so these are the new enrollees?
Yes, sir. Just these two. I'll be collecting them just before chow. Colonel Taylor just wants the control quals met, and we'll take it from there.
You sure you don't want them spending the night? We just had four enrollees raise the flag this morning. Got a few empty bunks in the squad bay.
Thank you for the offer, sir. But Colonel Taylor's orders are clear. They'll be bunking in the pea pods.
What's the matter? Afraid we might be a bad influence? Teach them how to think for themselves?
Ah, our dear Swift. You'd better steer clear of that one. He won't be happy until no one is. Alrighty then. We'd best get you started. I'm Major Salamander, and I run our little corner of paradise here.
You obey the Major's commands as if they were my own. With a sense of deference and urgency.
All right, Chief Warrant Officer, I'll take it from here.
Salamander returned Fitzy's salute as the Chief Warrant Officer led Richards and Truelove back out through the gate, then steered Downer and Britton toward the line of Quonset huts.
So, on behalf of the Supernatural Operations Corps and the Camp Commandant, welcome to FOB Frontier's Suitability Assessment Section, or as most folks call it, the SAS. This is where we put our captured selfers until we can be certain that they can be trusted with a SOC commission. We aim to please, and I know you're going to enjoy your time here.
Over Salamander's shoulder, Britton could see the far end of the compound, lined by another length of high chain link, razor wire topped fence. Behind them, the gates rattled shut, and he could hear the scuffling of boots as the bladed barriers were drawn back into place.
Safe and controlled magic use is everyone's responsibility. Accidental magical discharges, AMDs, can disrupt the mission, harm your teammates, and even be fatal. Since the magical current is tied so closely to your emotional state, it is critical you use your limbic dampener as directed and contact medical immediately if you are feeling unduly stressed. During psychological profiles, be sure to be fully open and honest. Remember, you can only conceal a problem for so long, and no adverse action will occur so long as you report quickly and fully. Failure to do so is punishable under the UCMJ. Magical Operational Readiness and Security, A Sorcerer's Guide, Pamphlet 01-1, Supernatural Operations Corps Media Services.
Major Salamander led them opposite the pillbox to a low building, plain, unadorned, and constructed of plywood and corrugated metal. Inside, a uniformed SOC sergeant sat behind a plastic desk typing at a laptop. He took Britton's and Downer's names, checked their badges, and tapped away. He handed each of them a laminated piece of poorly mimeographed paper that listed bulleted rules of conduct for the SAS and explained what was required for enrollees to be deemed suitable.
Just remember, our watchwords here are safe and controlled. Don't rumble with the other enrollees. Follow the orders of your instructors, and above all, no unauthorized magic use. We've got suppressors, but we prefer not to engage them. Every time your magic is forcibly suppressed, you will be assigned a score of +1. These points are deducted over time. A score of 0 is preferred for suitable SOC candidates and contractors.
I can't control my magic.
Don't worry about that, novice. We're gonna start teaching you to get a handle on it as of today.
Salamanders took them back outside.
The rules here are simple. Just remember what the sergeant showed you and... perfect timing. Take a look.
One of the SAS enrollees, shivering in cast-off bits of military uniforms, had broken away from the group practicing their pyromancy and made his way toward the main gate. None of the guards moved to stop him. Swift stepped forward.
Don't do it!
Three soldiers emerged from the base of one of the guard towers and advanced, weapons pointed at Swift and his small gang, who began to back up.
Stand down, Swift! Looks like you lost another one. You just watch and enjoy.
Don't! Don't be their dog!
One of the soldiers switched his carbine from single shot to 3-round burst. He pointed it at Swift's face.
With all due respect, sir, shut up!
The long-haired young man looked at his feet and marched on toward the pole with the plastic U.S. flag. He reached the flag and hauled on the thin white cord that anchored it to the pole, raising it to the top.
If I could trouble you just to wait one more moment, please.
Salamander stood at the position of attention in front of the young man and raised his right hand. The young man imitated him with the earnest awkwardness Britton had seen in new recruits since he first joined the army.
Do you swear to use magic only in service to the duly authorized government of the United States of America, abiding by the tenets of the McGower-Lyndon Act?
I do.
Do you agree to obey the orders of the superiors appointed over you?
I do.
Major Salamander shook his hand and clapped him on the shoulder.
Welcome to the SOC, son. I'm proud of you. And the Army is lucky to have you. Sergeant Pirelli.
Sir?
If you'd be so kind as to take young master...
Ruiz, sir. Everybody called me Rock Monkey.
Ruiz, right. The Terramancer, I remember. Please take young master Ruiz here for out-processing an assignment to a sail at Coven.
My great pleasure, sir.
Two simple questions with two simple answers. That's all we ask of our enrollees here. Once they're on the dampener and under our expert instruction, most master the basics of keeping their magic under control in fairly short order. But their loyalty to their country and their suitability to handle magic in its service remains an open question. It takes a little time for some folks. There are always holdouts like Swift and his no-no crew over there, but eventually, they'll always come around.
What happens if they don't?
It doesn't come to that. I doubt we're going to have trouble with you, young lady, are we?
No, sir.
Outstanding. You two are already assigned to a coven, so you're not truly mine, but Chief Warrant Officer Fitzsimmons has entrusted you to my care to ensure you learn to control your magic and to purge any fool ideas out of your head. Can't do the job if you're not on board with the mission, right? This way, please.
Britton jerked his thumb at the cinder block pillbox.
What's that, sir?
That, my good man, is the end of the road. Final consequence of recalcitrance. You don't want to go there, and you sure as hell don't want to have anything to do with what's in there.
Salamander turned away from the pillbox and led them into the schoolhouse. The interior was marked with the same temporary military utility as the exterior in classic CB style. The plain plywood walls were covered with posters straight out of a high school civics class. One diagrammed the meaning of the American flag, another explained the Constitution. Three or four depicted the dangers of unrestrained magic use. A huge photograph of the rubble of the Lincoln Memorial dominated the room, the Block incident written in red letters beneath. Just as Salamander motioned Britton and Downer to the chairs, the No-No crew shuffled in, sullenly taking their seats with a resignation born of long practice. The soldiers who had ushered them in took up positions on either side of the door. After a moment, a few more civilians straggled in, filling up the remaining chairs. The long-haired boy with the seaweed-slick skin sat at a good distance away from the rest of them, puddling water around his feet that tracked on the concrete flooring to pour out the seams between floor and wall. He looked embarrassed, his eyes on his feet, but Britton could occasionally catch him casting glances toward them. Britton could feel his magical current, pulsing, wild, barely under control. Swift slumped down in his chair beside Britton and stared at him, tapping a bitten fingernail against the corner of his mouth. Britton stared straight ahead for as long as he could stand it, then finally turned to face him.
Nice outfit. What are you doing here if you're already in a coven?
I have no idea.
You're lucky they didn't shoot you.
Oh, I'm worth way too much for them to shoot me.
And I suppose even fucktards like the good major here have some sense of obligation to free citizens of the United States.
Running's a felony, Swift, you know that. Per the McGower-Lyndon Act, you don't have a whole lot of rights anymore. Besides, as far as folks back on the home plane know, you're all dead anyway.
Trust me, little girl. You'll curb your enthusiasm fairly rapidly. Within a month, you'll be wishing these fuckers had shot you.
I'm the fucker that shot her.
Downer didn't look at him. Instead, she bristled, standing up and lifting her shirt to show a patch of smooth pink flesh that slightly contrasted with the skin around it, the mark of rushed magical healing.
They did shoot me. Here. They had to, but I get it now.
Your hip, huh?
Swift turned to a scrawny, pale adolescent, only barely a man, with spiky blonde hair, wearing black denim jeans and a gray hooded sweatshirt. His upper lip was studded with patches of peach fuzz that Britton guessed would never become a true mustache.
Looks more like they shot Genius here in the head, eh, Pyre?
Brain's still addled. She'll get it eventually.
I already get it. You don't get it. Why would you want to be a fucking selfer?
Selfer is a badge of honor. Someday, hopefully, you'll come to understand that. Now sit down, little girl, and mind your elders.
Pyre flicked down his middle finger, which burst into flame.
Unauthorized!
Salamander's current reached out to suppress the pyromancy.
And that's yet another point added to your record. What does that put you at now? 1 million? 2?
Fuck you! And maybe fuck you too, Downer. Jury's still out on that so far.
She's just a kid. Leave her alone.
Now, Swift. Pyre. You want to join your mommy in the hole?
The currents died, and Swift slumped in his chair, chastened.
No, he's terrified.
She's gonna get out someday, and when she does, we're free, and you're screwed.
For your sake, I sincerely hope that day never comes to pass. Because we both know nobody is gonna be free. Everybody, including you, will be dead.
Swift sat silent in his chair, his fear palpable.
All bark and no bite. Swift, novices Britton and Downer are contractors from Umbra Coven. They're only here to go through basic indoc and control. They're already spoken for. You're wasting your time.
Maybe. But it sure is fun.
Another woman entered. Britton caught his breath. She was the most beautiful woman he had ever seen. She wore faded blue jeans that hugged slender thighs and rode low on gently curving hips. Her shirt blazed an image of a beatific Christ, dispensing benediction from a metallic burst of golden fire that accented her breasts. Almond-shaped eyes dominated her face. Black hair fell to her back, thick and shining.
Ah, Our Lady of Perpetual Nagging Guilt. Nice of you to join us.
Hi, Ted.
The woman was ignoring Swift and addressing the soaking boy in the corner, smiling warmly.
Don't talk to her, Wavesign. She's so keen to raise the flag you can feel it. That crap's contagious.
Shut the hell up, Swift.
The speaker was pale and raven-haired, lean like Swift, but with a gentler look.
He can do what he wants.
Aren't we all here for instruction, Tsunami? I'm instructing. Besides, someone's got to counter the bullshit this one can't seem to stop spewing.
The beautiful woman ignored him, smiling at Britton.
Welcome, Therese. Better late than never. Please take a seat.
Hey, man, what's going on?
Wavesign glanced uncomfortably at Swift for a moment, before turning back to her.
Steak night.
Everybody loves steak night.
Swift and Pyre scowled at the conversation, but Wavesign seemed to be taking courage from Teresa's presence and pretended not to see.
What's steak night?
We get second round off the main chow hall supply. They have steak night on Tuesday, we get it on Wednesday.
What's wrong with that? Steak doesn't go bad in a day.
This steak was never good. Therese found one of the flattened boxes in the dumpster before they carted it off.
Grade B, for military or prison consumption only.
That's no surprise. You learn to get used to that when you're in the military. It may be new to you folks, but I've been eating that crap since I signed up.
You were Army?
Man, that sucks! You're in the Army and your punishment for coming up latent is that you have to join the Army?
That is truly special.
All right. If we're all done getting to know one another, let's get started. As you can see, we have two new enrollees here. Oscar Britton and Sarah Downer from Umbra Coven. They're already assigned and billeted elsewhere. I certainly hope you'll give them a genuine SAS welcome and be extra nice. The rest of you are here either because you're new to the SAS or we feel that your loyalty to the United States is questionable. But you all have one thing in common. You all ran from the SOC and violated the McGower-Lyndon Act. We had to track you down. We had to bring you to justice. You're publicly dead. You belong to us. You may not be grateful for the gift of your lives, but that doesn't change the fact that it's a gift your government has graciously given you. The SAS is a second chance for all of you. The smart ones will realize that, like it or not, your latency has changed your place in the world. You have the option of trying futilely to buck a system that, for all its flaws, was established for everyone's improvement and safety. Or you can do the smart thing and realize that the only way to use your magic productively and rejoin society is attached to that flagpole out there.